Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjublilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM 103.7. I'm Patricia Cavalleri, and in this series we shall be hearing from academics about their research and from students and other members of the campus community about the many activities which will be taking place during the coming year.
I'm very pleased to have with me in the studio for University Matters on Campus FM today, Miss Christine Schultz. Just a few words about my guest. Miss Schultz is the Research and Policy Manager of the National Commission for Further and Higher Education. The National Commission for Further and Higher Education is an advisory body to government on the future development of further and higher education in Malta. In this context, the role of the Research and Policy Unit is the data collection and analysis of the annual statistics data collection on further and higher education, as well as other research projects like Eurostudent, which form the basis of policy development. Christine holds a master's degree in history of art, political science and philosophy. That sounds like a really nice mix. From the Free University Berlin, as well as a master's in comparative Euro-Mediterranean education studies from the University of Malta. She has been previously employed as financial officer with the European Students' Union in Brussels, Belgium. Welcome to the programme, Ms. Schultz.
Thank you.
This is a very interesting and important, significant project, I think. So it is a good idea, I think, to put across what the Eurostudent project is all about, really, because it's of interest in the widest possible sense to Malta from the social point of view, from the economic point of view, and I think, obviously, without the right data, policies cannot be correctly targeted, really. So do tell us, what is the Eurostudent project, actually?
The Eurostudent project is a project that tries to collect comparable data on the social and economic conditions of student life, not just in Malta, but across 30 different countries in Europe. So the intention is to collect similar data at the same time so that we can understand the social situation of students in each of our countries as well as across Europe, so that we can also better understand, are there any differences also in between countries across Europe when it comes to the social and economic condition. And this is, of course, important both for policy development at European level, but also across countries, and also for monitoring of policies when it comes to contributing to increasing participation in higher education, which is what the European Union is trying to do with the EU 2020 strategy, which aims to raise the attainment level of 30 to 34-year-olds. So if we want to increase participation in higher education and attainment, we will need to also know who are the people who are actually entering higher education, what obstacles are they facing, and to monitor the progress with regard to attainment.
The National Commission for Further and Higher Education is part of a consortium. Perhaps you could tell us how we fit in with that.
Exactly. These 30 countries which are participating in the project, they are each carrying out their national survey. But in order to support them in this exercise, the Eurostudent project actually monitors and supports the different national country teams. It does, for example, devise a common questionnaire to be used across countries so that the questions are similar and comparable data can be collected. Supports them in the implementation of that stage of the national survey, for example, on how to contact students, how to get information on the background of the higher education system, so the data can then be compared to what is the actual situation of higher education in the country. Then with regards to contacting them, the data cleaning, the data analysis. And it also provides the platform on which the data eventually will be submitted, so that you can, for example, if anybody can download it from the international database, and also to create a joint synopsis of indicators, which is a report which analyzes the data across the countries. So each of us, each country, conducts its own survey, but the project then compares the results that have been collected across countries. And our position in this is a little bit particular because we are the only entity in this consortium which is actually an advisory body to government. The other entities are mostly statistics offices or research institutes, and their priority lies with the sound collection and implementation of the survey, whereas our emphasis is more on how do we disseminate and use the information for policy development.
When the data is collected, and we'll talk about that in a little bit of detail, who would be the main users? We've spoken about policy in our case with this direct contact as advisor to government for your commission in Malta. But outside of that, who are really the main users?
It depends a lot on the different countries. Some countries who have more of an experience with regards to carrying out national surveys, many a times it's the actually national unions of students, which will be interested to find out, for example, so to what extent is the student support system supporting students? So to speak, if we want to break it down for Malta, is the stipend helping the students enough? Or do the students actually have to work because the stipend is not enough to cover the expenses? Other times it's, for example, actually researchers which are interested in carrying out research on the social condition of students. For example, in our case, we have that perception, for example, that the Southern Harbour region, too few students from there actually go into higher education. And, for example, this research could provide a lot of interesting data for those researchers that are interested in looking in more detail into that subject area. It could be policymakers, it could be the institutions themselves, because we also collect data with regards to the assessment of students about the quality of the program, of, for example, the organization of the timetable with regards to the qualification level of lecturers. So it could be also institutions themselves which could be interested in analyzing this data. For us, our main priority is, first of all, to collect this information and to make it available to the European project, but we are also, of course, always interested in responding to requests for information. So if any actor would, for example, come forward and say, we would be interested in getting more information on who are the students who are mobile. Imagine the European Union Programs Agency wanted to assess the success of the Erasmus program, and they would want to ask us, look into detail about this. This would be something which we are very much interested in, to establish collaboration projects on then analyzing also the results.
How much of the information is open to users, and how much of it is special request?
Well, the international database, which contains the data of all the 30 countries, is accessible to anyone, and you can download the information in Excel and then use it further, but always our data will always be aggregated information, because we have to safeguard the anonymity of the students, because we ask quite detailed and sensitive information. I mean, some of the information that we're requesting is on the income and expenditure situation of students, the work status of students, how many hours do they work, how many hours do they spend on studying in the classroom, outside of the classroom, about their special needs situation, about their parental background. Of course, especially in a situation like Malta, if you actually line up all this information neatly, you would be very easily in a position to identify that it's you or me who has provided this information. That's the reason why our data will always, to a certain extent, have a limited accessibility. But based on request, we would be interested, of course, to provide aggregated information to the needs of the different users, either prepared by us or then, for example, aggregated, and then it can be further used by individuals.
I think that's an important point to make, because you're going to be going out and asking these questions of people, and I'm sure it's important for them to know that they cannot obviously be identified.
Yes.
And Malta is a small place, and as you say, a few bits of information here and there, and you'd probably be able to
pinpoint
if not who, at least perhaps a family or something like that. So I think it's an important point to emphasize. We've spoken about some of the aspects related to student life that are tackled by this survey. Perhaps we could go a little bit more in detail. The questionnaire itself, I saw it online, I didn't download it, but it seemed pretty long.
Yes, it is quite long. Unfortunately, it will take quite a bit of time. This is also one of the reasons why this survey is conducted every 3 years and not on a yearly basis. In order to also then look into how certain aspects are correlated, how, for example, the place of residence is correlated with the participation in higher education and at which institution you tend to continue studying, we need to ask a lot of background information. So, of course, first of all, we're asking some demographic information about the age, the gender, whether or not students have children, and what's the age of the youngest child, because we're interested to find out also whether the number of children or the age of the youngest child could play an influence in the way students are studying. We're asking about the type of qualifications that students have used in order to enter higher education. Is it always going to be the matriculation certificate or the A-levels? Or is it also possibly vocational education and training programs, either at MCAST or ITS, or then to use those qualifications that they've obtained over there for entry into programs, for example, at the university or other private institutions? We ask in which study program they are enrolled in, whether they, for example, study full-time or part-time. We ask about the living conditions. Where are they living? Are they living with their parents? Are they living on their own? Are they possibly sharing flat or live in student accommodation? About how much time they spend for studying, both in the classroom as well as on their own, and whether they are working alongside studies. There are also questions with regards to plans for future studies, which is quite interesting because lately we have seen also a drive towards students going on to continue at master's and doctoral level. And we would like to understand whether people already have plans to continue their studies while they're still enrolled in their undergraduate program, for example, or how many of the master's students are actually considering conducting a PhD later on, which I think is very interesting both for the country but also even for the institutions to better understand what could be the potential of the number of students they can expect to return.
Planning strategies.
Now, another thing that is interesting for us is the question of student mobility. How many have been mobile, whether it is Erasmus or another program that they might have pursued, and also questions with regards to the level of education held by students' parents. Does it make a difference whether my father has also gone to university, or is it not important at all for my choice in continuing studying? Also, the perception of students' social background, in a sense, do students consider their parents as to be from a high social background or from a low social background? And does that play a role in whether or not I always intended to go to university, or whether if I, for example, thought that this is not going to make a difference for me, this is a waste of time, I'd rather go and start working instead? So we have actually a lot of questions, but a lot of these are in a way interlinked, which is the reason why this questionnaire will probably be quite lengthy. But we hope that doing this every 3 years will give us a very good data set that we can also use in years to come to analyze further.
How are you choosing the students that get this questionnaire?
In fact, considering that Malta is so small, we are sending the questionnaire to all students. Many countries actually just use a sample, but we do not have the luxury of having 2 million students. The university has only about 10,000 students every year, so in order to have a good and representative sample, we're inviting all students to participate. And it's going to be students both from university, MCAST and ITS, so from the public institutions, but we also invited private institutions to participate if they offer qualifications, because sometimes private providers offer only short programs for continuation. Exactly. And that wouldn't quite fit and be comparable with the life of a student that is doing a bachelor program or a master program. So we invited private providers if they also offer full qualifications. And we have 8 private providers which are going to participate. So we hope that we also get an interesting overview of who is the student and is enrolled in public as well as in private higher education.
I think we're now about 12,000 students on campus, actually, so another 2,000 to add. How will they be getting this questionnaire?
We will be sending the questionnaire through the institutions. In fact, it is the institutions that will be inviting the students, at least for the university. They will be getting this by email, so they can fill in the questionnaire online. And since the questionnaire is quite long, we have agreed with the institutions that they will send what is called a personalized link. So the link will be either for you or for me, and it's just linked to me personally. So if you, for example, start filling in the survey and you either have to catch the bus or you just don't have the time to continue filling in, you can stop and later on continue through the same link where you left off. So you don't have to start and finish in one sitting, which we hope is going to be a little bit easier on the students if they need to, for example, check, okay, how many hours did I spend working, last week in my job, or how many hours am I usually spending in the classroom this semester. They will have the opportunity to cross-check and then, come back later and fill in this information. The same thing is also true for the information with regards to income and expenditure. Although we would like to stress that things like these very sensitive points when it comes to time budget and also income, those will be voluntary questions. They are not forced to answer this information. But of course, this is also the type of information which is usually very interesting for a number of people to know, to better understand what is the income and expenditure situation, and also how many hours they spend on things like work, on things like studying.
I think it's important that we put across to listeners who may not be students, but perhaps are parents of students or grandparents of students, that might pass on the message of just how important it is for students to take the time. But this time of year with exams coming up and this kind of thing, probably there might be a certain attitude, oh gosh, I don't have the time to do it. But it is very important for Malta and also in a European context that we get the best number of results as possible. Perhaps we can go a little bit into the output from this Eurostudent, this comparative report. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in this comparative report because there are so many differences in Europe, in size, in type of economy. Some countries are more rural, some are industrial, some are huge, Germany, and then there's little Malta or whatever. How useful are these comparative reports?
They are interesting, I think, in a way to understand what are the different scenarios in education systems. Of course, most countries always will be interested in finding out, for example, okay, am I on top of the list or on the bottom of the list on a certain subject? Now, what's, for example, interesting with regards to the last report, in fact, also the report before that, is to find out what is the, what's the income, the makeup of the income of students. I think that was quite an interesting revelation to see that there are certain patterns across Europe on what is the main source of income. And we have, for example, the Scandinavian countries with the majority of students getting student support, government support. And interestingly enough, Malta was one of this group where the majority of the income was income from government support. And then we have a group of countries which have in the majority support from paid jobs. So they're working alongside their studies, which is, Central Europe for the most part. And then we have Southern Europe in general, which has in the majority parental support. So it is, the Italian student being supported by their family. And originally, we were expecting that we probably fall into this group, that we probably have in the majority parental support. It was quite interesting, actually, to identify that we had in the majority, actually, government support. So that we fall into this group of the stipend being the main source of income. Now, maybe this is changing a little bit with the makeup of the student body in Malta with possibly more postgraduate students who study part-time and work, which could potentially be a shift, or also maybe students who are not eligible for the student maintenance grant and then rely on the support either of their parents or of their partner, and, for example, doing this as a second chance route while their children might be in education and they are, you know, trying to get their first degree. This is, I think it's in flux, but I mean, it's interesting to kind of understand, okay, certain countries fall into a certain pattern where the concept of the student is either, for example, they are the ones which get the student support. In other countries, it is the parents which are the main source of income. In other countries, the student is independent and just gets goes to work and finances their own studies. This, I think, is very interesting. Then also, this has impact on, for example, also where students are residing. You know, again, there we have a very common pattern where in the majority of countries, students are residing on their own. And they will be, for example, flat sharing, whereas in the southern Mediterranean countries, a lot of them are residing with their parents for different reasons, either for economical reasons, because it is just too expensive to move to the big city and to have an apartment and then to study, or also for convenience, because I already live in the city where there's my university and I go and study over there. And then actually in Central and Eastern Europe, a lot of students are living in student accommodation because that is the cheapest form of housing that they can find if they want to go to university. It's also interesting to see that a lot of countries do not actually have part-time studies. This, as a form of student status, Malta is one of the very few countries where such a thing as part-time status exists, where I can say, okay, I need to combine studies with work, I need to combine studies with family responsibilities, I cannot study full-time, so I'm studying part-time, and I have, for example, half the workload of a full-time student. In many other countries, students are enrolled full-time, and they don't study full-time, they study part-time, for example, and only visit some classes and severely reduce their study time at home and work alongside their studies, which is very interesting. Why is there no political move, for example, in those countries to actually establish such a thing as a part-time student status if there's the situation? So, yeah, these reports give quite interesting insights into a number of different issues where we can see, okay, first of all, what is the situation and possibly what can we learn then from these scenarios with regards to other issues, for example, student mobility or continuation of studies at master's level.
I remember applying for university as an 18-year-old, and at that time everyone used to choose the university as far away from their home as possible because mm-hmm. they want to be independent and get out. This, I'm talking about the early 70s. But as things got more expensive, I think in the UK, people certainly choose the nearest university to their home so that they can stay at home.
Yes.
Because obviously it's much cheaper to do that
than
to actually move away. So economic situations in general have also influenced the way students actually function, really. What you've said is quite interesting because I was wondering in the beginning whether it was valid to look at one country compared to another. But in fact, I suppose it does produce some very interesting information in that regard.
For the most part, the report will give you just a very clear and interesting insight in how the system works. Because, okay, there are certainly other sources where you can find out how an education system will function on paper. For example, how is the structure set up? What type of institutions do exist? How long is the duration of a bachelor program or a master program? Or what qualifications do you need in order to enter higher education? But it won't give you the picture of how many students are actually going through alternative routes. It won't give you sort of the flesh on the bone, so to speak, on how the system functions in reality. And this is, in a way, what this survey and also this report gives. It gives a little bit more of a colorful picture of how the system functions in reality, because we know how our system operates in principle in Malta, but we don't know how does it affect you and me. What is actually the livelihood and the situation of the students? As you said, in the past, possibly students were choosing or seeing, perceiving higher education as a period in their life where they made experience, where they became independent, where they chose how their career is going to progress. But economic situation, especially the economic crisis, I think has affected a little bit on the type of opportunities students have. Individuals have in principle in higher education, possibly even how they choose their study programs, dependent on, for example, can they afford the tuition fee or do they see career opportunities afterwards? And this is where it could be also interesting to see in a comparison between different countries. How is this affecting one country from another? Is it, for example, affecting us less because we think that in Malta the financial crisis maybe had less of an impact than in other countries? This could be an interesting opportunity. Of course, certain things will never really make sense in Malta, like, for example, the opportunity to move out. I'm sure that for many students, this is not even an issue because it is a financial expense. It doesn't really possibly make that much sense to move out unless you wish to become more independent. But, for example, this time around, another interesting point that we wanted to look at is what is the situation possibly of Gosseton students? Could there be something that faces them specifically, because probably the majority of those will have to move out in order to participate in higher education unless they just choose the programs in Gozo or commute on a daily basis. How does this affect them if they commute on a daily basis in terms of how much time they can actually invest for studying at home or for work if they need to in order to fund their living?
When will you be actually sending out the survey? Do you know that?
The survey is being already sent out, so students now have the opportunity for the next period until the summer break to fill it in. And they will be receiving the email directly from their institution, so please look into the email box that you indicated to your institution to receive the link. We will also be resending some reminders in case those who received the email but then it kind of filtered down into the email box, so to get frequent reminders to fill in the survey. And it will, I'm sure, be very useful and interesting for policy development, but also for anyone interested in higher education in general.
I have several other questions on my list, but unfortunately, our 28 minutes is up. Thank you so much, Ms. Christine Schultz from the National Commission for Further and Higher Education, for coming to talk to us about the Eurostudent.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.
Il-program li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġu plilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.